Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello everyone and welcome to this episode of Only Murders in My Mind with Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson.
Hello.
We three have returned again in thunder, lightning or in rain.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. I wish you'd move this cauldron though. I keep tripping over it.
We'll need that for later. Yeah. Ever since we did that session on culinary.
Yes, yes. You wouldn't believe what's gone into this pot.
I used to be in a speech choir. You can't tell now the way. I know.
A speech choir?
A speech choir, darling. And
you're going to have to tell me what one of those is. I mean, we've had hoagies, now we've got speech choirs. Choir,
yeah. We would perform at the school prize-giving event. Oh. And one of the things we learnt was the speech from the three witches.
Yeah.
Macbeth.
Yeah. And another one, which I can't remember. And we had to enunciate properly. It was like, when shall we three meet again? And we did it. It was like, D-d-d-d-d-d-d-d-d. I've never seen anything like it. I've never heard anything like it since, but that's beside the point.
How did we get onto this?
I don't know.
I'm surprised that Mike hasn't pulled us back from the brink.
I thought I'd just got to sleep for 2 minutes.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Oh. And wake up and hope it really was all a dream.
Well, you could, you know, dream the plot of your novella.
Our episode tonight is The Butterfly Effect on crime and perhaps cold cases. And I found this when I was researching it a bit mind-blowing because I was like, well, what does it really mean? I know what the butterfly effect is. It's this thing about if a butterfly flaps its wings in one continent, it can cause a typhoon in another continent in theory. That's basically...
Yeah, it can change the path of a tornado.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the thing is that, I mean, for our listeners out there, we actually do prepare for these podcast episodes.
Sometimes by thinking, who suggested this one? Yeah.
And some time ago, we met to discuss what we were going to talk.
And this one slipped through.
And now, weeks later, we're thinking, whose idea was this?
But anyway, so if we take it as a small thing can have a knock-on effect on something big, so it can influence the path of something large, that feels like it's more relevant to crime writing than possibly butterflies and tornadoes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know really whether this one applies, but it did jump into my mind, especially when I read from both of you the things that would help me research it. Minority Reports. I don't know where you've got the precogs.
Yeah.
So these are people who can predict a crime before it happens, and then the main detective John. In the film, sees him involved in a crime that they're going to predict. So he tries to change the manner of the way this is predicted.
Yeah, because isn't the idea that by the precog seeing the crime before it happens, it can then be prevented?
Yeah, but they always arrest the person that was going to do it before they've done it. So they're arresting innocent people because the precogs have said... Yeah. That person is going to kill somebody or hold up a bank or something like that. And I did watch this film and it was quite complicated.
Yeah.
But I thought to myself, yeah, he's a small thing, and that was him seeing what this particular person who could predict the crimes of the future. He just got a tiny flash of what would happen to him. Mm-hmm. If this went reported, if this was reported.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether you agree with that one being in this.
It's sort of related, I think, isn't it? That tiny thing that it has implications for something much, much bigger. I must admit, I was just thinking about the film The Butterfly Effect. Have either of you seen it?
No, I saw when I was researching it, I saw... lots and lots of information about it, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, the basic premise, and I haven't seen it for years, is that this guy finds out that he can by whichever means, go back in time and change things. So we can change one thing in the past. So, you know, I think his life isn't quite the way he would want it. So he goes back and changes something. And then, you know, back to, you know, sort of wakes up back in the future, if you like. And then the thing is, that thing's all right. But then something else is much, much worse.
Yes. Yeah.
And he keeps trying to fix things. And every time, you know, it's kind of like whack-a-mole. You fix one and then something else pops up. Yeah. And I think I must have seen the director's cuts. It's got quite a dark ending. So
I remember seeing something, it might have been this, I don't know, something similar where it could have been one of these science fiction ones, you know, the series where the person kills a person who's going to do something terrible and then he finds out that that person was going to kill Hitler before the start of the Second World War.
Oh, yes, I've heard of something like
this. So by stopping that person doing something what he thought was terrible, he enabled Hitler to come to power and be responsible for millions and millions of deaths.
I'm vaguely thinking about Stephen Fry's Making History, although it's ages since I've read it.
It could be, but it really did funny things to my mind.
Indeed.
I've recently been listening to, or just finished listening to, a series by Jodie Taylor, which I think I may have mentioned in previous episodes.
Oh, yes. The Samaries.
The Samaries is the first series, and the other series I've listened to is The Time Police, which is connected.
Is it a similar kind of...
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Samaries people come into The Time Police. But The Time Police basically is in an age in the future where time travel is acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, people can do it. And then there were these great time wars, because what was happening, people were going back in time to make changes, like killing Hitler before he became who he was, and so on and so forth. And then what's happening is causing chaos and mayhem in the future, because all those people who would have been born
weren't,
or those people.
Yeah,
and it's fascinating. I mean, it's very amusing. Some of it's very far fetched, but the whole, which isn't hard to believe, but the whole premise of the butterfly effect is basically what they had these time wars and they had these time police to stop people from going back in time.
Yeah,
To make these small, what they think are small changes, which could have catastrophic effects on the future.
Similarly, in Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, there's some time travel in that, and I think there's a dodo at one point, and, you know, the time travel, they say to the time traveler, well, couldn't you have saved it? And he's like, oh, but I couldn't, because I was too busy trying to save the coelacanth. And it's like, you know, you can't do all the things the time.
I don't know which Terminator it was. I've got a feeling it might have been the second Terminator, where they go to try and kill the person that built the robot in his house. Mm-hmm. And he ends up helping them to destroy the labs.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That sounds like two, yes.
So that's sort of...
Because I did the double bill quite recently.
Yeah, and then when you get to Terminator 3, you go, oh, it didn't work. because of something which, again, I'm not going to say, because if you've never watched them, that would spoil it completely.
It would. I don't know if I ever will get to Terminator 3, but...
But when you think many crime murder mystery series you watch on the television, the tension's built up, and quite often it's the road to surviving, the road to finding out who the killer was or who did it is down to somebody watched a video again and noticed, hadn't noticed before, but in the corner so-and-so was doing something which didn't fit in with something else.
I'm thinking about In the Blink of an Eye, Locke makes an observation and goes, you know, and it turns out, no, Locke is actually correct. But it was so subtle that without that extra knowledge, you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the thing. I was thinking, Mike and I were talking a bit earlier, as we sometimes do. You know, when you think of the amount of different components there might need to be for a complex crime, it's amazing that any get committed, or that, you know, people don't get caught in the act more often.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
And the other thing that came to mind with this is that it's the clever authors who put that little butterfly effect in to a story, and it turns out that's the red herring.
Yeah.
But it's the little bit that's put in to try to make you think, oh, right, yeah, it's just that little sentence or just that little observation must be taking me down the road to finding out who did the murder.
Yes.
And in fact, the clever author has put that in as the red herring just to take you down that path.
Yeah, so there's someone's disappeared. And again, it's a Gaia Marsh book. I will get to say that correctly one day. And there's a casual mention of a scarecrow in a field. You think, right, that is obviously, and of course it isn't.
No. You sometimes, yes, you'll go, why are they making such a, you know, a thing about that particular bottle of wine or something like that? And you think, it must be poisoned, and then they all drink it and they're fine. But the butterfly effect,
I suppose it's like a magician, isn't it? When they're kind slight of, you know, hands. Getting you to focus on something. Yeah.
Could you use that phrase then when we talk about cold cases and the fact that because science has advanced so much, people that would have got away with... Is that a butterfly effect or is that something bigger?
I'm not sure, but it's dead interesting.
It is. You know, I'm just. It's probably not the same thing, is it? But you know, like prehistoric.
But it's that same kind of tiny detail that would allow you, because we can now utilize it in a way that perhaps couldn't be done at the time.
Yeah,
allows you to kind of extrapolate back.
It can be a tiny thing. It can be the DNA taken from the tooth of a skeleton or something like that, and that the skeleton might have some hair in the hand with the bud at the end so they can get the DNA.
And maybe everyone assumed it was so-and-so's hair, and no, it wasn't. No. It was someone else's entirely.
So, you know, things like that will... I find it absolutely fascinating when we look at things like that.
Yeah. Another one I was saying to Mike about was kind of if you're, you know, writing, I suppose this counts for any kind of novel really, but particularly in crime. If you change something in your plot, you change a tiny detail and then you find like things are snowballing and you can't do this because this, and then like you read it back and you think, oh, because I did that, I can't do that. Do I go back and change that or do I change all of this?
Yeah, it could be something really simple as well, can't it? You know, about, I don't know, some medication that one of your characters is on and how it's going to affect their the way that they see things. And you don't think about that to start with, and then you sucked into it then, aren't you?
Yeah, or something that messes with the, you know, the desired effect of the crime.
Yeah,
so that the criminal doesn't actually get the benefit they were looking for and the reason why they did it in the first place.
Yeah,
and some people are very clever about putting that butterfly effect here at the beginning of the story. I was thinking here of Patricia Highsmith's Stranger on a Train.
Oh, yes.
Strangers on a Train.
Yeah.
And it all starts with a chance meeting on a train where two men discuss, hypothetically, swapping murders.
Yeah.
And from that, the whole thing snowballs. But it's a chance meeting. It's something that
it's
could
that
have led to nothing.
It's kind of simple but brilliant.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's Sliding Doors. Can you put that under the butterfly? Isn't that...
Ooh, you could, couldn't you?
Where the...
Yeah,
something
because
happens.
Whether she gets the train or doesn't get the train is completely...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes a whole difference to the outcome at the end.
You're making me want to watch it again.
Yeah. anything you've watched lately, Mike, that you could put under that genre, do you think? I'm putting you on the spot here.
Again, I was thinking of a programme that we, again, mentioned before we started recording, Carol and I did, and that's Ludwig.
Yes.
And in Ludwig, who... I mean, I won't go into detail, but
yeah, we might want to do an episode on
I think
one
we
day.
Will.
We do.
Yeah.
We've all seen it,
which is a plus.
But this guy is a great puzzle solver, and he if things aren't quite in place, he sees them. And some of the murders there, he's sort of saying, "Well, actually, no, that couldn't have happened." And he identifies these little things,
tiny things.
Yeah. That couldn't have happened because if that happened 6 seconds before that happened, then next thing wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, he's extremely logical, isn't
extremely
he?
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think he's also a bit Hercule Poirot-ish in his, you know,
When you see him at the beginning of the series, he's got his pot of pencils all sharpened, you know, and he's got his big ruler to rule his lines to do his puzzles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody
yeah.
who's not watched it, it's David Mitchell. Yeah, it's dead good. Ludwig.
Yes. Yeah. Another one that we could perhaps do a whole episode on is Slow Horses.
Oh, easily.
Yes.
Because we all three of us now are... Absolutely. I mean, it was.
I think
such
there's
a
new novel coming next year, by the way.
Such a brilliant series. That was on Apple. And I actually subscribed to Apple just to watch that series.
Was it worth it?
Oh, it was.
Yeah. It is fab.
Yeah, I've watched that. But
back to the. I suppose we should get back to the butterfly effect.
One of the things going back into to real life crime, Lindenberg baby kidnapping.
Yes.
Which happened in 1932. And apparently, the outcome of that was influenced by minor details, such as a wooden ladder left at the scene and a ransom note with unusual phrasing. And apparently these tiny clues, and they all were, which on their own meant nothing, when the police started to piece them together, led to them arresting somebody.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, isn't it? It's sometimes, I suppose the butterfly effect is these little things, sometimes adding together, cause... you to come to a conclusion about something.
Yes.
But if you didn't make the link, then on its own, it seems to be
insignificant, isn't it? And this is where Holmes, the computer that the police use now, links things like that together, little tiny things.
Don't IBM have a sort of a version of, or a sort of thing you can ask a question called Watson?
Yes, cool. They do. Yeah.
I'm waiting for Poirot the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is, as I say, it's interesting because before they had this joined up thinking, the police, similar crimes could be committed in different parts of the country, and there was no joined up thinking about it.
Yeah.
So people would get away, especially if they were a mobile person that moved around the country with their job or something like that.
Or if it was something ridiculous like they were on the border of two police forces.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So it's made a big difference. And sometimes it is. One of the things, I don't know whether it can be used as evidence in court in this country, but handwriting, it can be a tiny... stroke of the pen that identifies somebody as, you know, that's forged, but this one is the real thing. Why is it the real thing? Well, when they've done the G, they've carried it on a little bit further than that one, which is the forged one, you know, tiny little things like that.
Yeah.
That can lead them down the path of perhaps finding the right person. But yeah. I mean, it's as I say. I found when we first said we're going to do this, I'm going, what? Where? Yeah. How?
A lot of it is to do with kind of nuance, and that's something you really, really need in crime fiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
You need those little tiny clues. And I mean, you know, if all the clues are big and obvious, what's the point, really?
Yeah. Well, what are some of the definitions that you sent me? Because I found those quite enlightening.
Things like. Tiny details, big consequences. And it's the idea that overlooked clues or minor actions can create a domino effect leading to the revelation of the murderer or the crime. So it goes back to what we've been saying.
It's
about those small overlooked clues, and that's where the clever writer either puts them in as red herrings or puts them in as integral to the story. But I suppose by making them seem insignificant, that's the cleverness in a way. Because if they put something in that seemed insignificant and was insignificant, then you think to yourself, and I've read books like this, and you think, why was that there? What was the purpose of that? It was neither a red herring nor part of the story. The clever writer, though, puts it in, but then makes sure that elsewhere in the book, something else seemingly as insignificant, you suddenly think, oh, does that seemingly insignificant have any link to that other thing? And slowly you're beginning to get that
Cause plot thickening. Sometimes it's not evidence, it's circumstantial, but it leads... I was thinking about something I saw a long time ago, and it was the murderer used to light his pipe with matches, proper, you know, matches.
Yeah.
And when he'd finished, he'd blow it out and he'd always put it in the opposite way to the live ones. Mm-hmm. And at some point he dropped one of these boxes and it was such a peculiar thing that he did.
Yeah.
Because most what you tend to do when you've lit something with a match was blow it out and throw it away.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He used to put them back. And mm-hmm. in itself, it wasn't evidence, but yeah. it led the detective. I think it could have been the guy with the Mac that Osh used to...
Columbo?
Yeah. I think it was a Columbo one.
The guy with the Mac.
The guy with the Mac. You knew straight away what it meant, though, didn't you?
Return of the Mac.
Yeah, the way you used to go, oh, thank you very much. You've been really helpful. And then he'd walk away and he'd go, I've just been thinking... And you could see people going, go away.
Yeah, thinking about an Agatha Christie, again, giveaway, and I'm not going to say which book it is, but yeah, they're trying to find somebody and they have lunch with someone who like knew them a bit. And she's, you know, they're saying, does this person have any habits? And she says about one and she said, I don't think he even knows he does it. And then, like, because this other guy's a master of disguise, they then catch him doing it.
Like,
aha, that is him, yes. Even though he would be undetectable.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise.
Things we do automatically, because obviously this guy with the pipe, it might have even been a cigar, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Didn't realise, he'd always done it, and he didn't realise that he just did it automatically. It was a reflex action. Light is whatever, and put the match in.
Back in once
it had been blown out, sort of mm-hmm. thing. So, it's the little things that some of our favourite detectives would notice, wouldn't they? Sherlock and Sherlock definitely would.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean that his stock in trade is noticing tiny things,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, although what I do like is when he'll come up with all these really subtle things. And then there's an episode with a hat, I remember, and he's come up with all these, you know, tiny little things about, you know, he's got a housemaid who's not very careful and things like that. And then he said, well, this man is of considerable intelligence. And Watson says, well, how do you know that? And Sherlock puts the hat on and it goes practically his nose. He said, well, a man with a head that size must have something in it. And I just love the contrast.
A big brain. Yeah.
Yes.
But Miss Marple was another one who...
Oh, she noticed watched out everything,
for those seemingly insignificant things.
Mm.
You know, either bits of conversation that she'd heard that didn't make sense at the time but did later after the murder was committed, or she saw things happening in the village which seemed to be slightly out of tune.
Yeah, and, tiny little things.
Yes. Yes.
And she could relate them to things that she'd experienced or
Yeah.
And I think
seen.
That falls into this whole butterfly
effect. Yeah. It's like we've said before, right. It'll be somebody that nearly always wears the scarf a certain way, and now they don't for some reason. And it's probably because that person wasn't the, you know, it was somebody pretending to be the person that always had his scarf that way, running across a field. And she noticed the scarf wasn't quite right, but nobody else could actually see their face because they had a hat on, sort of thing. But yeah, absolutely fascinating. Has anybody got anything to read out on this particular
thing? Not particularly.
I don't know. I was just thinking,
have you used the butterfly effect at all in any of your books, Carol?
I probably have, yes.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
I'm just
I can think of one, Carol.
What? Go on.
At the moment, I mean, just slightly going off on a slight tangent, if you haven't looked at our blog that accompanies this podcast, then we recommend that you do. We really should. But as part of the blog, and I think Carol mentioned she was doing this back in episode 37, she started to write a novella. And she wanted to test it out with the readers. So what I've been doing is I've taken the first 5 chapters of this book and put it into a simple audio, which you can find on the blog. And
address, Mike?
Onlymurdersinmymind.wordpress.com. But if you do go on there, Carol, what Carol's looking for, and she'll say this is very draft, it's very raw, but she's looking for some initial comeback on that. After all this, Carol and Liz are looking at me thinking, yes, Mike, but what's this got to do with the butterfly effect?
Well.
In one of the chapters, because what I've been doing, I've been taking the chat to be new AI to create the audio. Have you ever met those people who just sort of talk and talk and talk, but actually never get to the point at which they're supposed to be getting to, which is the butterfly effect. And that's what I'm doing at the moment, because when I started this monologue, I knew where I was going. But as I've gone along, I've forgotten where I was going.
No, it is actually like, you know, on those graphs where you have a line that looks like it's heading for the axis, but it never quite gets there.
That's where I am.
That is exactly, is it the parallax effect? Yeah. Which must be related to the butterfly effect.
Either that or it's just old age.
Something like that, sure. Yeah.
But no, seriously, in this series, in these five chapters, there is somebody called Cowslip Brown. She's one of the main characters.
That poor woman.
Hello. And what it turns out is that Cowslip Brown is working as a cleaner, but she drives a latest car and lives in a very expensive part of town. And this is worrying one of the police, the main policeman, who sort of keeps saying, she's a cleaner, but she's got top of the range car and she lives in that part of town. Why? And it's a bit like this butterfly effect. You can see it there and you think, oh, this is something quite insignificant. You know, she, all it says, she has this.
It's kind of Chekhov's gun, isn't it?
Yes, she's got this car. She lives. There's no other detail. The fact that this car and this address both come out in an interview, but it's got the, is it a DCI? It's got him concerned because it's not making sense to him. And that's a bit of a butterfly effect, because you hope as a reader, and I don't know because Carol's not giving me chapter 6, but you hope as as a reader, there's going to be a reason for that, and that will butterfly
come out.
An impact on the overall story.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Because if it doesn't, I'll have to have a stern word with Carol.
No, it does. There was a whole backstory.
So you have used.
I have used it, but without even realizing I was doing it.
I pointed out that you'd used it. It just took me half an hour.
I suspect that in the Warranty Detective series, I have used similar types of things where there's been a little clue. And it's not really been correct. It's trying to lead people down the wrong path, sort of thing. I think as crime writers, we tend to do that. Hopefully not to the not to the point where people are going, I just don't understand this anymore, because she said earlier that this was happening and it's not. But just to put a few threads in to make people think about what you've done it, haven't you, in yours?
I try.
Yeah.
I think it's a case of working backwards, isn't it? Yeah. It's a case of saying, right, I've got to the end of the book and I know the answer. I found out who's killed so-and-so or what the resolution of this crime has been. And working backwards, you say, oh, right, and now I can see the impact of that little sentence or that phrase or that bit of information I was given near the beginning of the book. Because if it's going to have that butterfly effect, that knock-on effect, then that transition's got to be seen, certainly by the end of the book. Otherwise, it just becomes an insignificant phrase or an insignificant piece of information that you didn't need.
I've just finished watching something called The Chateau Murders, which is French-Canadian. The last episode, because this was a really complicated, talk about butterfly effect, this was a really complicated plot. So they spent the last episode reiterating all the clues while going up hundreds of steps. I was going, how can they still talk? They've just gone up three flights of steps and they're chattering away about, you know, really going through it all again, because they wanted to, because the killer was nobody that anybody suspected. Nobody. Mm-hmm. That was good.
Yeah.
That side of it was good. Mm. But I'm sure the butterfly effect had led us up many the wrong path as we went through this plot.
I can think of a sort of example of the butterfly effect where it's an Agatha Christie again, and the killer doesn't necessarily kill people himself. He plants seeds in people's minds.
Oh, yes.
Ooh,
isn't that the one where...
I'm not going to say which one it is in case anyone's going to read it.
All right. But... I'm sure it's one of the later ones, so I'm not allowed to say
anymore. I am making a motion with my head.
Yeah. She's actually saying, don't say any more, Mike.
Zip, zip, zip.
But it's a very...
It's a good one.
The clever thing at that is that the conclusion to that particular story will surprise you.
Oh, it absolutely will.
Because it's actually one that Poirot can't solve. Well, he can. He can find out.
Keep digging there, Mike.
No, he finds out who is responsible for these murders, but actually has no proof of it. He has to solve the case in another way.
Yeah.
And it's well worth... I've not read it. I saw it as a television program.
Oh, it's a cracker to read.
Is it? I saw it as a television program.
I've got it. I can lend you it once I've read it myself.
That is a dilemma that having police officers as friends and family, that is a dilemma that they often... They know who's done the crime.
Yeah.
They got no proof. And that's why they can't take them to court. Sometimes they'll have even... The criminal will have said to them, you know, I did it, Reggie. You can't prove it.
Yep.
You know, and it's really frustrating for them. Yeah. And I think the butterfly effect on this is we all need a cup of tea and a biscuit.
I think it quite possibly is.
I think it's time for a cup of tea and a biscuit.
And I think, you know, we have to congratulate ourselves, because I don't think you will as listeners, to have actually got through this, because we didn't know what we were going to talk about in the first place.
Well, we sort of
did. As we've got to the end, you will probably think, yeah, and they still don't know what they're going to talk about.
I'm just hoping there's no butterfly effect from like a stray crumb of snack or anything like that.
Yeah.
But we've said this before, and I'll just say it again. If there's any subjects you'd like us to talk about in this genre, please let us know and we'll do our best to have a go, won't we?
And also on that... theme, it appears from at least two of the episodes we've done in the past that Agatha Christie and Miss Marple are very popular. So if there's anything on that line that you would like us to discuss, please let us know. Anything that we've not talked about before. We're great fans of Agatha here, so we're more than happy to talk about any angle that you would like us to.
Angles of Agatha.
Angles of Agatha.
That's the title for one of our next upcoming episodes. I'm going to go and put the kettle on, folks. So come and have a cup of tea with me, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now. You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music In Peril was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.